morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Article II Gun Shop versus Gonzalez. Mr. Gardner.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Your Honor, I first want to address briefly the question of the 1981 and 1998 reports. Largely the significance of that in light of the government's brief has been minimized. The government now takes the position that it was offering those reports only for a limited purpose of showing Gun World's knowledge of its legal obligations. And really that issue, as the government also points out, Gun World knew of its legal obligations, and that's really not the issue that we need to focus on with respect to whether they acted willfully or not. I would note, however, that even for that limited purpose, those reports are still not admissible because they didn't comply with this express requirement of Rule 56E that the documents be sworn or certified copies. They clearly were not sworn or certified copies, and that's undoubtedly why the government now tries to argue that their admission was harmless, because Gun World admitted in its deposition that it had knowledge of the legal obligation. The real issue in front of the court today is what does the word willfully mean in light of Congress's amendments to the statute in 1986 and the effect of that on this court's 1980 decision in the Steins case. The first point, I think, is that in 1986, Congress amended the statute, and the government essentially wants to overlook that fact and pretend that never happened. Clearly it did happen, and there must be some significance given to the fact that Congress did something to the statute in 1986. And what Congress did to the statute in 1986 was, among a lot of other things, was to add the word willfully to 923E, which is the statute at issue here, and also add the word willfully to Section 924A1, which is the criminal statute, which was the statute that the Supreme Court interpreted in the Bryan case. And the Supreme Court in the Bryan case affirmed a lower court jury instruction which said that willfully means intentionally and purposely and with the intent to do something the law forbids. The fact that willfully was it's a general rule of statutory interpretation that when the same word is found in the same act, that it's to be given the same meaning. And that argument is even stronger in this case because it was put into the act, both words were put into the act by the same act of Congress, the Firearms Owners Protection Act. And given in light of that rule of statutory construction and in light of the legislative history, which I'll address in a second, it's clear, I think, that we would submit that the word willfully has the same meaning in both statutes. And the government doesn't suggest any rule to the contrary why that wouldn't be so, other than to say that this court decided Steins in 1980. And I don't think that is a good enough reason. We have to look to what Congress did in 1986 and how the Supreme Court has interpreted the companion word in the other statute.
And do you think that that purposeful disregard or plain indifference is not the proper definition?
I certainly don't think that plain indifference is the standard anymore. There's nothing in the Bryan case in that jury instruction which suggests that could even remotely be the law anymore. I think that purposeful disregard is probably the minimal acceptable standard, but I think there's also the element of with the intent to do something the law forbids, and that was a key element in the Bryan case. And unless you want to ignore the Bryan case and its interpretation of willfully, which I don't think you can do, then I think that element is a necessary element here.
What would be the lesser test or example of it would not be a violation? Would it be indifference or negligence or what?
Which would not be included anymore?
I think it wouldn't be a violation. I guess would not be willful. What's
right.
Below the level of
negligence? Mere negligence would certainly not be a violation. And I think the standard of the second standard from Steins would also not be the standard. At a minimum, it requires at least purposeful disregard. That is, that the government would have to show that the licensee did what he did on purpose, intending to do something that the law forbid.
And your client, what are you saying that they did? Was it negligent or just...
They're saying that they're trying to argue the plain indifferent standard, that they were indifferent.
No, you.
I'm sorry.
What do you think your client did by leaving some of these blanks?
I think at most, my client was negligent. I'm not even sure that they meet that standard, but one could certainly make a reasonable argument that they were negligent, although the numbers that they missed, out of 880 forms, there were a dozen where there was just one error, and I think in one case two errors on one form. So I'm not even sure that goes above negligence, but I think there's an argument that could be made, and I don't think that negligence is the standard that would apply here.
Mr. Gardner, what about the larger numbers that are suggested, the 49 occasions of transfer of firearms to legal aliens without documentation? What about those numbers? At some point, do you think, let's just take it in a hypothetical, could numbers start to evidence the willfulness?
Absolutely they could. Now, those numbers, of course, are not in front of the court. There's only one count that the government ultimately sought summary judgment on, which is on appeal today, and that's the count related to...
Well, that's why I made it a hypothetical.
Right.
I understand.
Absolutely. I mean, I think numbers ultimately do prove that whether someone was acting purposely or not. I mean, clearly, if no forms had been completed, that I think could be a purposeful disregard.
What about in our summary judgment situation? We have how many instances?
We have 800 out of 880 forms. We have a dozen forms that on which there was one, and as I said, I think in one case two errors.
Could a district court, taking those numbers, also add to the calculus the length of time that this gun shop's been in business? I mean, this is an experienced and relatively long-term dealer. Is that something that could also build into the consideration of willfulness?
I think it could go into the equation because, again, it would go probably to the question of whether they acted, what their intent was. But I think the key factor is looking at the specifics, the specific allegations that are made to determine if during that particular time period that the government alleged, I mean, the way the government could make a point of that would be to allege a wider time period and say, instead of looking at, I think in this case it was a year and a half or 2 years, they could go look at 5 years and say...
You're saying that, what is it, an under 2% error factor would not evidence willfulness.
That's right. I think it would not. And as I said, I think the way you need to look at this is looking at it in terms of the number of blocks of evidence or a number of blocks of information that had to be completed. And when you look at it that way, the number gets down to, I think it was 0.05%, an error rate which is pretty phenomenal for human beings, I would say.
And that form is a legislatively directed form, right?
Well, the statute says that the secretary by regulation shall determine what records shall be kept, and that's a form that has been implemented pursuant to an implementing regulation. Mm-hmm. With regard to... The reports which Your Honor mentioned, again, those reports we don't believe are admissible at this point. And since I've really addressed, I think, the issues that I wanted to, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for the rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Gardner. Mr. Lawrenson?
May it please the Court, Counsel. Essentially what Gun World is asking for here is a white heart, empty head defense to the Gun Control Act.
What was the first part?
White heart, empty head defense.
White heart.
If they didn't mean it, if they didn't mean to violate the act, that the violations that they committed should not be the grounds that ATF uses to revoke their license. That's just not the statute that Congress passed. I think it's also important, Mr. Gardner made the point that he thought that they did pretty good. For human beings, they did pretty good. Well, this is not an area where pretty good was good enough for Congress. Congress set out a statute that really requires some very easy things for a gun shop to do. This form is not a difficult form to figure out. It can be figured out on its face. And the requirements that Congress has put...
Would you say the error rate is greater or lesser than that of the Internal Revenue Service?
I would say that the filling out your tax form is incredibly more complex than doing this form.
I didn't ask about my filling out my tax form. I asked about the error rate of the Internal Revenue Service.
I would have no idea, Your Honor. I know that the error rate for this form should be zero. It's a very easy form to fill out. And it should particularly be zero after numerous instances where ATF has taken the time to come in and inspect this licensee and point out its errors to it. That's happened in 1981. It happened in 1998. It happened in 2000. And then when we did discovery, after the notice of revocation was issued and the case came to the United States Attorney's Office, and we did discovery, we found still more errors in the same critical portion of the form. The most important part of this form is where the person who wants to buy the gun says to the gun shop, "I'm not a fugitive from justice. I haven't been adjudicated mentally incompetent. I'm not an illegal alien." And a variety of other factors that Congress said would prohibit people from taking possession of guns. The person buying the gun is supposed to say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, whatever the answers are to just nine simple questions, and then sign the form. The gun shop is supposed to take a look at that form and make sure, number one, that all the blanks are filled in, and number two, that the answers are consistent with the law allowing the transfer of the gun. And then they're supposed to sign the form saying, based on this information, I have no reason, and everything else I know, I have no reason to believe that I shouldn't transfer this gun.
So how do you determine if their failure to look at it and scrutinize it was willful?
Your Honor, you look at it exactly the way the Steins case did and the way the Goodman case did. At a certain point, you say, after ATF has gone in and pointed out, hey, you're not getting this right, this is important stuff to us, we're citing you with violations, and they've discussed those violations. They did every time. They gave them a list of violations and discussed those with them.
How many times did they do that?
Three times. And each time, there was a promise of future compliance.
Was one of them in 1980?
1981, 1998, and then in 2000, which was the basis for the revocation.
So this was the third time then?
Yeah, and the fourth time was the forms that we found in discovery after the notice of revocation had already been issued. So even in the throes of a revocation proceeding, when they know that the case is you know, they're now in dire jeopardy, ATF has done what they said they're going to do to them, they still didn't get it right.
How do these most recent, whether it's the fourth incident, how you suggest, Mr. Lawrenson, occurred, or the third one, compare with the 1981 and 1998 as far as numbers of violations?
The 1981 was they didn't record the birth dates properly. I don't think that ATF, in fact, ATF didn't revoke the license based on that. They want it done the way they want it done, but I think the significance of 1981 is it was notice to the dealer that we take this stuff importantly and you better do it. In 1998, they had, I believe, in the range of 30 violations. I don't know the exact number. And the 2000 violations, Mr. Gardner is right, there are 12 violations of the same ilk. It's not numbers. This is something that...
Well, if it's not numbers, why does the government take the delayed... why isn't there action in 98? I understand you start your argument, Mr. Lawrenson, with the suggestion there's no error rate here. The Congress wants every box checked correctly. I don't question your representation that that would be congressional intent. But you give a pass to 30 and you go on 12. I suppose Mr. Gardner can get up and rebuttal and suggest there's an improvement here. I don't know. But on this sliding scale, if you got 30, Seems to me that's a significant number, and not for our branch to challenge the executive's determination on judicial discretion. But if you're going to make the argument of no error, it's a little hard sometimes to accept it if you're taking a pass in 1998, excuse me.
I don't think I want to go as so far as to say that absolutely no errors I will say no errors are permissible. What I will tell you is that the agency has some prosecutorial discretion here. And in all the cases that we've cited, and in this case, they do it the right way. They don't the first time, I mean, the 1998 errors, that was the first time these really serious errors of not having complete certifications were noted. And I think it was fair for the agency to take a pass at that time to warn Mr. Soskin that his gun shop was going to lose its license if they didn't improve. The problem is they come back and they do it again, not once but twice. And at a certain point, the fact that they improved, Congress isn't looking for improvement here. They want it done right to begin with.
As I understand it, this thing was initiated, there was a straw purchase in the initial investigation, and that was dropped, and these others were sort of added, I guess, addition.
No.
Is that not correct?
No, that's not. There were charges brought both for a straw purchase and for these record-keeping violations.
I mean, these were not tied together, or what, not from the same investigation or something?
Yes, it was.
It was from the same
investigation. It was all tied up. I mean, the straw purchases are obviously separate transactions.
Yeah, but they're a lot more serious.
The notice...
aren't they?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
The notice tied them... They were all in the same notice. And
right.
What happened is when we moved for summary judgment, after taking discovery, we moved for summary judgment on both grounds, but then a witness surfaced in the middle of the briefing schedule, and it wouldn't have been fair to ask the court to consider something that at that point we realized there probably would be a triable issue.
But when you say prosecutorial discretion, I don't know whether you would have gone forward with the whole thing without the straw purchase.
We would have. In fact, that was one of the questions that Judge Kennelly asked, and in the middle of the briefing schedule, he asked ATF to tell him, are these things too linked so tightly that if you didn't have the straw purchase, you wouldn't have done this? And we submitted the affidavit of the director of industry operations saying, yes, we still think that the record-keeping violations would have been serious enough.
Well, I have another question, and that is in a kind of a hypothetical on page 19 of your brief, you say, if ATF had decided to revoke Gun World's license based upon the violations noted in the 1981 or 1998 reports, perhaps Gun World would have a point. ATF would have needed to submit declarations of the 1981-1980 inspection to establish violations noted in those reports, et cetera. Then in the court's opinion, it said, Gun World's nearly 20-year history of repeatedly violating record-keeping requirements concerning the use of Form 473 leaves no doubt that Gun World's violations in 2000 were willful. It seems to me that he went beyond the 1 year and took in the whole time to determine willfulness. And that's what concerns me about this willful. One could be negligent or inadvertent or something, not good, but nevertheless not willful. But the judge looked at the whole 20-year history, which would include those two reports, which your brief discounts as well, but that he didn't consider those.
Well, it discounts it in that section of the brief, but I have two important things for you to know about that. First of all, because of the standard of Steins, Mr. Gardner says we should, you know, that the significance of these two reports of violations pales now because of what he thinks is an admission in our brief. That's not true. The 1981 and 1998 reports of violations are significant because there is no way the gun world can say, you never told us. We never talked about this. This was a surprise to us.
Knowledge is basically admitted, and you say, well, it doesn't matter. Since they admitted it, that's not a big deal about whether or not those are admissible.
I'm saying that for that purpose alone,
yeah, but knowledge and willfulness.
Knowledge is the first step in the test, and then the second question is willfulness, which can be established either by purposeful disregard or plain indifference.
But the judge went to purposeful disregard, or willfulness, based on the 20-year history. Is that appropriate?
Well, let me tell you the other reason it's appropriate.
Is that one appropriate, first of all?
Yes. Gun World admitted these violations. And I took the depositions, and I double-checked that it was in the record this morning. Gun World admitted that the 2,000 violations were repeat violations. And so I guess what I have to say about those two reports is, no, the significance of those prior violations can't be minimized. First of all, they established knowledge. Gun World knew exactly what was going on. And second, you know, the evidentiary issue aside, they admitted that they had repeat violations in 2000. We did it again. They told me at the deposition and this court through the record that those were valid. I mean, we didn't get down to the nitty-gritty of each individual violations, but those were indeed violations.
So there's no debate even about whether or not this was willful.
I don't think there can be.
It has to be on summary judgment, doesn't it?
Pardon?
On summary judgment or whatever we are.
We're on summary judgment. I don't think that there is any possibility of a material issue of fact. When Gun World admits that it received all these prior notices of violations, that the violations were discussed with them at the time. And for this part of the argument, I'll even pretend that the old violations weren't actual violations. But they had these meetings with ATF. They have a warning conference. They promise future compliance. And then we get to 2000, and they're still violating the same serious portions of the form. The only way you could decide that that would not be willful would be to overrule the Steins case.
So it's willful as a matter of law.
Willful as a matter of law. You know, the other thing I think that's important to point out here is Gun World makes a big deal about the Bryan case and seems to almost comes right and says is that Bryan overrules Steins. That is a gross mischaracterization of that Supreme Court case. In the Bryan case, the issue was a criminal defendant, a criminal proceeding, not a civil revocation. The criminal defendant was filing off serial numbers off of guns and selling them on street corners. And he came to the court and said, well, you can't prosecute me under this statute because I didn't even know about this statute. It's not something that ever came across my desk. And the Supreme Court said, no. Bad purpose. If we take your acts and find bad purpose, that will also be a sufficient condition to find willfulness. But the Bryan case never said that another sufficient condition, plain indifference, wasn't also enough to establish willfulness. It's just a pure logical fallacy for Gun World to say that the Bryan case had any impact whatsoever on Steins.
Does it matter if it's a criminal case?
Pardon?
Bryan's a criminal case.
Bryan was a criminal case.
This is a... I don't know what it makes a difference.
It makes... I suppose it makes a difference in somewhat of the equities, and also it makes a little bit of a difference when you look at the legislative history that Gun World wants you to consider and put it in its proper place. The change to the statute in 1986, I'd like to talk about that for a second. The change in 1986 was to remedy an error that was pretty apparent to the courts and apparently to Congress as well, in that before 1986, the provision of the statute that said that you could deny a license to somebody included the willfulness standard. But for some reason, the statute's provision on revocation didn't include the willful standard. And so Congress, in 1986, amended that. Now, the key point to remember is that the courts had seen this omission and read it into the statute when they were dealing with revocation proceedings in the past. So that change actually was no real change at all. I guess what I'd like to leave the court with is that this is a really, as the court well knows from all the cases it deals with, guns are a serious matter. We're not selling widgets here. For Gun World to say that we're getting better or that it was a mistake but not too bad is kind of like the person who has been in front of a court before for drunk driving. The court might not take away their license the first time. They might not put them in jail. But at a certain point, when they keep doing the same act over and over again, and an executive agency keeps telling them, you've got to stop that, at a certain point, that executive agency is warranted in saying, enough is enough. What you're doing is willful because I've told you enough times for you to learn, and you're still doing it. It's not impossible. In fact, it's pretty easy for these films to be filled out correctly. ATF deserves that kind of compliance, especially after meeting with a licensee this many times. We, unless the court has further questions, we would ask that the court affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. And Mr. Gardner?
Going in reverse here, first of all, Brian did not specifically address plain indifference, but I think in its holding that the willfully required proof of intentional, purposeful conduct with the intent to do something the law forbids, Brian essentially did deal with plain indifference, and I think would make it clear that plain indifference is no longer an applicable standard. The government makes a big issue of the fact that that Gun World knew of its legal obligations, and as Mr. Lorenzen points out, Gun World hasn't disputed that it knew of its legal obligations. But that's only the first part of the issue. Willfully requires something more than simply knowing of its legal obligations. It requires, as I said, under Brian, intentional, purposeful act to do something the law with the intent to do something the law forbids, and the government. I'm not clear now whether they're saying there can be an error rate or there can't. Initially, Mr. Lorenzen said that they expect zero and then kind of backed off on that. Congress understood that people make mistakes and that you're never going to get a zero error rate. Congress specifically in the legislative history said with regard to 923E that the purpose of adding willfully is to ensure that licenses are not revoked for inadvertent errors or technical mistakes. And similar language in discussing 924A1 that they don't want prosecutions where someone has carelessly committed a technical record-keeping violation. Congress clearly understood, unlike the government does, that you can't have that you're never going to get perfection despite the best efforts of human beings. And really that's what we have in this case. We have a significant effort by Gun World. Yes, they knew of what they were supposed to be doing, and the fact, if you look at the facts that are in front of you, the 16 blocks not completed out of 34,000 potential blocks, that shows that they were making a diligent, significant effort to try to get their error rate down to zero, but they didn't.
Well, suppose 1.4% of the flights that left Daly from O'Hare crashed before they arrived. Would you view that as trivial and irrelevant?
No, it wouldn't be trivial and irrelevant.
So why is 1.4% beneath notice when it's your client?
Well, the question, Your Honor, is whether that error rate was due to willfulness. Would you prosecute or take action against them?
I suspect that the executives of United Airlines would be in prison for life if 1.4% of their airplanes crashed before they reached the destination
airport. And if you could show that it was willful violations where they were intentionally not doing maintenance in those situations, then I clearly you could.
What do you envision, Mr. Gardner, as the trial in this case? Should we agree with you? Assuming past motion for directed verdict, would you be about putting witnesses on? I mean, I'm not requiring you to go into a case that's yet perhaps never to occur, but would the intention be to put on people at the desk or counter, I should say, who say I do my best and then let a jury decide? Is that how you envision this to play out?
I think with regard to this issue, I'm not sure that you need to even go that far. I think you can look at the numbers themselves. We're here on summary judgment because those facts aren't in dispute.
No, I understand, but I mean, you want to go to trial.
Well, I think in this, I would want the court to reverse the summary judgment and go back for trial. And I think the trial in this case would be something along those lines of the people who are doing the work would testify. I mean, you have the numbers, I think, speak most loudly, but you would have the people who were involved testify, and in fact, they did testify at the during the depositions. That they were making a best effort, and there was a review process, but unfortunately, in a very, very, very small number of instances, something slipped through. Now, I would also note that in every one of those instances, the information that, with maybe one exception, the information that was missing from the form was, in fact, on a state form that was attached to the federal form. So it wasn't that the information wasn't collected. It was simply that the information wasn't transferred from the state form to the federal form. And I think that also goes to the question of willfulness.
Following up on Judge Easterbrook's question, if you were successful in this case, would you argue in a subsequent case that the Seventh Circuit has held that a 98.6% success rate precludes prosecution by the ATF and the U.S. Attorney's Office in a case?
I don't think it would necessarily preclude it. No, it would depend on the other facts, which we have in this case, where the information was in fact recorded and just not recorded on that particular form. The individuals testified concerning at their depositions concerning what efforts they were making. So I don't think that fact, I think that's the strongest fact, but it's not the only fact, and it would not necessarily preclude the government from prosecuting.
Is there anything besides the legislative history where either in the law or in the regulations where the word inadvertent is used or something similar that's less than willful?
There is not that I know of. The only word that Congress used, other than in the legislative history, in the statute is willfully. I'm not aware of any. I mean, there may be floor debate as well. I'm sure there probably is floor debate.
And if one of these, let's just say, one where they didn't put down the driver's license and all that. If there's evidence where the guy said, well, you know, I knew this person had his license taken away. I knew he didn't have one, and so I just wasn't going to put it down. That would be willful.
I think in that case it would.
I think there's a distinction in testimony, wouldn't there be, if someone saying, I guess if whatever these deposed witnesses said about, you know, I just goofed up, I should have seen it, we put it on the other form, et cetera, versus, I don't know whether they would admit it or not, but maybe that's what has to be proven, that, yeah, I knew he didn't have that license, he'd been in here before, and we wouldn't have sold the gun otherwise, and then only needs one violation for
right.
Willful.
And I think that is exactly the reason why you have that with the intent to do something the law forbids language, why that is so critically important to apply, because that draws that enables the distinction to be drawn between an act where one is I goofed up and on the other is, boy, I knew what I was doing, but I just went ahead and did it anyway. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Thanks to the government counsel. The case is taken under advisement. And the court will proceed to the second case of the day, Hicklin Engineering versus Part.